Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning. Joe, college football talk, we would normally be all about it right now, and it's got me so fired up. I looked at the coaches poll that came out yesterday. I think Tennessee was at 26, I think tied with Boise State. That's got to be the first time in, I don't know, since Butch's year in 2016 where they're close to the top 25.
Is that
the coaches
right?
Poll? I mean, come on.
RV, they're RV receiving votes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right, yeah. That's probably the first time they were RV in the preseason. And it's so, like that coaches poll, that's the thing. So it's August 7th. Normally this is camp starting. We've had all the media days, two, 3 weeks ago from all the conferences, camp starting. Preseason polls come out, and everybody's complaining about the polls, even though the polls don't actually have any impact on anything. But very different time.
That's right. No question about it. Let's bring in our friend David Ubben from The Athletic, who covers the Vols. David, how's it going, man?
Going pretty good. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. I just have to tell you, I feel like it's my duty. Joe Rexrode last week was called Joe Rule in a press conference on Zoom and is now requested that all of his cohorts at The Athletic call him that on a permanent basis. So I felt like it was my duty to pass that along to you.
Done and done.
Hope you're cool with that. By the way, Ubben, I'm sure that's a name that you've heard some butcherings of over the years. Do you have a best one?
Well, the most common is probably Ubben, the long U.
Yeah.
That's the one that's probably, I'd say 70% of people, the first time they say it, drop the long U. But I've gotten Urban, I've gotten Oven, I've gotten Evans. It's a rough way to go most of the time.
I thought Oven might be one of them.
Yeah, cause... I mean, I feel your pain. There are people, like, they look at my name, Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, and they'll literally be on Twitter typing something to me, and they will spell it R-O-B-B-I-E. And I'm like, you're literally looking at my name. It's the world we live in, David.
I suppose.
So, David, obviously some big news coming out in college football over the past week with the Big Ten players, Pac-12 players putting together some lists of requests and demands from everything from COVID-19, health concerns to racial issues. What have you made of that, and what do you think it says about college football players and the time we're living in with the voices that they have nowadays?
It's really interesting because it's all sort of inextricable, with obviously, the sort of racial movement in America, and then the virus sort of impacting everything and showing players just how much impact they have on their campuses and how much what they do sort of balances out or lifts economically not only their campuses but their communities and obviously and when they have that much influence or when they have that much impact, they'd like to have some influence as well. And they're, obviously, specifically right now in the Pac-12 and to a lesser extent the Big Ten and last night the Mountain West, they're exercising that. And so, between players wanting to be heard and impacting their campuses to players realizing that they would like a little bit more. I mean, again, I just think you think about all the millions upon billions of dollars that have poured into athletic departments and have – gone into slides and have gone into brand new lockers and have gone into coaches' pockets and all this. Think about all that money year after year after year that just sits in universities because they have to spend it because they're a nonprofit. And as that money had gone into the black community instead, just a portion of it, think about the changes that could have been made. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's the thing about college athletics is – there are a lot of opportunities that are dependent on football money, right? I mean, there are other sports, and you have to provide a certain number of sports to retain the nonprofit status. But I think that's something people miss is, in a way, this is like hiding money. I mean, that's really it's not quite like the show Breaking Bad where you're cleaning money with a car wash, but it is essentially hiding money to maintain that status, which and if you didn't have nonprofit status, and some legislators over the years have brought that up and threatened it, I mean, that would completely change everything.
Yeah, and I think, so much of the virus issue goes back to that because, you know, they are nonprofits, but they don't have a reserve of money. If you have a reserve of money, you're more likely to be faced with lawsuits, you know, challenging the definition of amateurism as the money has exploded in college sports. So when you don't have that, now all of a sudden you're in a budget crunch. And this is sort of why I'm not really, you know, the sort of, you know, cries of we're broke. They kind of fall on deaf ears for me because this is they're broke by design. They live paycheck to paycheck by design in college athletics. And that's just sort of the entire structure of the entire sport. So when you need some extra money, I mean, if you needed $50, $60 million sitting around, which they could easily have found over the last 5, 10, 15 years, they need it right now. They don't have it. They don't have it because they didn't want to have it. And now when they need it, they don't have it. So it's just, I mean, the whole thing is kind of gross. And I think the average person, I'm not sure, understands the economics of an athletic department and college sports in general. Because it's pretty frustrating the closer you look at it.
David Oven from The Athletic on the line with us. And, David, you and Andy Staples came out with a really interesting piece about the gap between Tennessee and Florida, and Tennessee fans painfully aware of the dominance that Florida has had on the field during the last 15 years. What were some of the interesting things that you two found out in that piece?
Well, I think you look at the on-field results. Tennessee and Florida the last couple of years, and you look at the rosters, you'd be surprised. I mean, Tennessee played their worst game, you know, the last 2 years. I think even probably worse than Georgia State against Florida. But you look at those two rosters, there is not that much difference. Florida's a little bit stronger in the defensive front seven. That's where you see a big gap. But pretty much every other position, they're really close to one another. I mean, Tennessee had more talent at four of the 10 positions. And so, you know, I think that's, you know, it sort of points to the idea that this gap between Florida and Tennessee is more, you know, mental or coincidental than just this huge talent gap. And I think, too, for Tennessee fans that are, you know, wondering about the status of the program, Florida's won 21 games the last 2 years. You know, Tennessee has won 13. Well, you're not that far, away from getting into that double digit win zone. Probably not in a year where you're only going to play 10 games, if that. You know, like 2020. But in general, you know, the roster is in good shape. Certainly, playing a tough schedule doesn't help. You've got to be better, build some more depth, develop the talent that you have. But Tennessee is, you know, a lot closer to being a good program than it might look like on the field.
Now, don't tell our Ari Wasserman I said this, David, please. But over that period of time, you can look at recruiting rankings and everything, and you can also say maybe coaching has something to do with the difference on the field. I'm just throwing that out there. Please don't tell Ari I said that.
I don't think so with Florida and Tennessee. I think there's development issues, and then Tennessee – you know, in 2018, they just absolutely, they lose the turnover battle 6-1. And then the year before, I mean, in 2019, I mean, they just got killed on the line of scrimmage. They were getting dominated. Jerry Garantano was running for his life. Meanwhile, Kyle Trask has an hour to, you know, sit back there and throw a little picnic for himself. So it's tough. I think, you know, obviously Tennessee's had some development issues, but the Florida-Tennessee gap is odd, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm going back a little bit and just take another shot at Butch Jones. I know it's too easy to do
brick
that.
Brick by brick, baby.
I'll stop now. Oh, yet another piece today, David, at The Athletic. Really interesting on Trey Smith. And that's, first of all, a guy of high interest to me in terms of where we are right now. The decision to, you know, looking at his health, and of course he's had the blood clotting, and he's got certainly, I think, an NFL future if he can stay healthy. But you talked to Dane Brugler, our outstanding draft analyst, about Trey, how attractive he is, and then some other guys too. What were your big takeaways from that?
I think the biggest thing is, I don't expect Trey Smith to opt out. And I think that there's a lot of reason for him to not. but there's a lot of risk, you know, if he doesn't as well. But, you know, the big thing is Trey is you know, he's a guy that is a top 20 pick sort of talent. I mean, you know, he could be even higher if he has a great year in 2020 and, of course, stays healthy as well. But you look at the rest of the roster, you know, I think Josh Palmer could make a lot of money this year if he has a big year. But, you know, I think there's still, you know, a lot of guys that, you know, came in with some good recruiting rankings that aren't going to leave, you know, and be super high draft picks. But you look beyond that, you know, you look at the underclassmen, you look at, you know, an Eric Gray, you look at Wanya Morris, you look at Henry To'o, you know, a Darnell Wright, Alante Taylor, Bryce Thompson. I mean, Tennessee, they've got a lot more talent in these 19 and 20 classes, you know, to a lesser extent to 18 than they do in this sort of senior class. You know, Trey Smith is kind of the lone standout, and it's not that impressive beyond him. And I think that's what stood out to me. I think you look at the 2022 draft, the 2023 draft, you know, and where Tennessee is at. I mean, you can sort of see the talent wave coming for Tennessee. You just have to keep recruiting and keep developing.
Yeah, Dane wasn't super high on Jarrett Garantano, I noticed.
Him and everyone else, I think. I think it's like, you know, with Garantano is an interesting guy because the tools are obviously there. You know, he looks like an NFL quarterback. He's added some weight this offseason. He's got a big arm. But, the production hasn't been there, the accuracy, the decision-making. He's obviously frustrated Tennessee's coaches, getting benched a year ago. I mean, it's weird because all the pieces are there. Just the production and the consistency are not. And I'm sure he's frustrating for NFL teams as well. But, you know, I still think, too, you know, some NFL team is going to fall in love with all those measurables because he has some of those things that a lot of guys don't have. And he's going to be really fascinating as he goes through the draft process next year.
David Oven from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. David, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Absolutely. David Oven, one of the best in the business. Jared Garantano. Not very popular. Garantano.
Oh,
it's changed.
Yeah,
I caught myself.
The disrespect.
Oh, man.
The disrespect.
Well, you disrespected Brett Kern earlier, so I figured I'd throw out some disrespect to somebody else. That's fine.
Yeah, Garantano, he's I thought it was a great story last year. I thought after the Florida game, we would never see him take another snap for Tennessee.
Yep.
He came in that Kentucky game. I went to the Missouri game. He was terrific in that game. He had some great moments. It's a good story. His teammates love him. He's got to get a lot better to me. If this season happens, better than 5-5 hinges on him doing some things that we haven't seen consistently yet.
No question about it. When we come back, what are the pros and cons to starting Pecorine in Game 4? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.